come back to order. Lieutenant Governor.
Madam Chair, members of the board, it's Commissioner. It's a pleasure to be here. As you noted, Madam Chair, I was not at your last board meeting, and it has been my goal over the last 4 years to try to attend all of your board meetings, to just speak briefly to the board and to talk about issues, both issues of the administration, because I serve, of course, as Lieutenant Governor, but also issues with the Department of Higher Education, because I serve as the Executive Director of that department, and because the Department of Higher Ed and the Department of Education work so closely together. Hasn't always been the case, but I am here to, especially for your new board members, to let them know how critically important that has been. We work together. In fact, we were just talking about the time when we met together as the Commission on Higher Ed, together with the Board of Education. And I hope that we have the opportunity to do that again, because, again, we have many shared goals. And what we are all very focused on, of course, is improving the quality of education from K through 12 and beyond here in Colorado, and to improve outcomes for all Colorado residents. And that's where we've been focused. We work with the department and our senior staff, and even below that, working very hard to make sure that we're trying to align the goals of the Department of Higher Education with the goals of this board and this department. And so, for example, one of the things that we work very hard on is addressing the remediation rate for incoming college students. That is not something that the Department of Higher Education can address by itself. And we know that when we have as many as 40% of all Colorado students coming to higher education needing remedial coursework, we know that impacts costs both for the state and for the student, and it impacts outcomes, successful outcomes for those ambitious college students who arrive but are not ready to do college-level work. So we've worked very hard again with your department to make sure that we're trying to, or at least thinking about, aligning graduation requirements with admissions requirements. Seems like a natural thing to do, but it's certainly not always been the case. As we work thinking about college and career readiness, that's important to you. Certainly it's important to the Department of Higher Ed, and it's important to the state, again, because it affects not just educational outcomes, but because it impacts the quality of our workforce. Colorado, to sustain its economy, must have a competitive workforce. It can't do that without having high-quality academic programs at all levels. That's particularly true.
Can
Madam Chair?
I ask a question about the students that are not ready to go to college? Have you ever talked about, and I know there's been a few examples of this, if you have a college and a high school in the same community, working together to get the kids to take that course before they graduate, instead of finding out when they go to school that they're not competent and they've got to, you know, take that math class? I think I know that Mesa did that with Grand Junction. I don't know if they still are, but it suddenly really brought it home to the kids that, gee, I've got to, you know, do this if I'm going to go to college, which made them more likely to learn it. So many of them are sort of unconscious when they're actually in high school and don't think that they, you know, they're wonderful there tonight. So I think that would be a worthwhile thing to kind of investigate, where possible, working together on that instead of waiting until they get to the college where they have to take the class.
It's an excellent point, Madam Chair, and you're exactly right. Not just at Colorado Mesa, but many other schools are doing that, working with local school districts, so that students know before they show up at college whether they're ready. And so that includes, for example, having some students as early as 9th or 10th grade take the AccuPlus just to see whether they're ready, and if not, to help prepare them. We also, of course, as you know, have seen many more students involved in concurrent enrollment, so that, again, students have the opportunity to determine whether they're college ready and whether they can earn credits at no cost to them. We know those students are far more likely to move on to college and to complete more quickly. So that is our goal in this state, is to have those linkages where there's not this bright line between high school and college, but where there's really sort of a fuzzy line which allows students to either get the remediation earlier if they need it, or take college-level classes if they're ready for it.
And it saves them money, because if they wait till they get to college, they got to pay for their class.
That's right. The remediation rate, Madam Chair, dramatically impacts costs to the student and the state. Right now, we spend about $50 million a year providing remedial coursework for students. And so students are paying tuition, and they're spending time, they're not earning college credit. Those students are far less likely to graduate and certainly less likely to graduate on time.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you're paying attention to that. Yeah.
The other issue, Madam Chair, that we're very focused on is our degree attainment gap. We've all heard about the Colorado paradox for many years, that we're a very well-educated state, and yet we don't do an above-average job in sending our own students on to college. Many of our college graduates come from outside of Colorado. We see that particularly clearly when we look at our minority and rural populations. So while we have a very high rate of adults with a post-secondary credential, when you break it down by demographic groups, we see that we have some dramatic gaps. In fact, Colorado has about the biggest gap in the nation between its white majority and its minority groups in terms of college credential attainment, four-year, two-year, or certificate. And that's not because our minority students do that much worse. It's because, frankly, our white adults are so much better than the national average. But the gap is significant, and so we know it's an issue for the state of Colorado and for our economy, because we also know that as a state, we are number one or two in the nation in terms of the percentage of jobs that will require a post-secondary credential. So we need to do a better job of reaching those populations. And the way to do that is, again, have that linkage between higher education and the K-12 system so that we're making sure students arrive at college ready. And let me just give you one quick piece of data, because that's what our department is about. It's really about providing useful information to help establish policy. So I asked our data staff this week to tell me what happens if we look at 100 Hispanic ninth graders in Colorado. So going back 5 years, if we look at 100 Hispanic ninth graders, 67 of those 100 graduated in 4 years. And of course, you know, the Hispanic graduation rate is lower than the overall graduation rate. Of those 67, fewer than half, 28 went on to college the next year. Most of those required remediation. And of 28 going to college, only 20 came back at the beginning of their second year. And of those 20, only 10, so we're talking about 10 of those original 100, graduated with a credential within 150% of time. That is, earned a four-year degree in 6 years or a two-year degree within 3 years. That's not significant just to those students or just that community. That's significant to our entire state and to our economy. That's what we want to work on. That's what we want to work on with you. And I just want to thank you for the opportunity to be here and present. You'll see me at most of your board meetings. I'll try to be brief, but I'm also here to answer any questions you might have about either the administration's position or initiatives or those of the Department of Higher Education. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your time. Anybody for comments?
Thank you.
Angelica, then I'll get you.
So I'm curious, what legislation, if any, for higher ed do you see across the street or expect to see that's going to help get our kids in and through? I guess it's our job to get them in, but to get them through.
Yes. Madam Chair, Madam Vice Chair, the biggest issue is our budget. We are seeing, we are making a significant ask in terms of an increase in our budget after many years of the Department of Higher Education getting cut, which results in dramatically higher tuition for students and thus limits access. We are asking for another 10% increase. It could be as much as 12.5% increase in general fund operating for the institutions. But what's really key here is, as a result of the legislation passed last year, that money is going to be allocated according to a formula which relies on performance. Performance is a factor in that, so that the degree to which an institution is successful in moving students through graduation will impact the amount of funding they receive. And even beyond that, the amount of funding they receive per student will be impacted by the number of low-income and minority students, so that students will, I mean, institutions will get a slight increase for working with those harder-to-reach students. The students don't get more money, but the institutions do. So that's really key. And the other big piece I'd like to mention is we're looking at, not in legislation this year, but something called prior learning assessment. If we want to reduce the time to graduation, We want to be able to give students, especially older adults who are returning to college, credit for work that they've already done, for knowledge they've already gained. So we're looking at not just things like advanced placement test scores or IB scores, but credit for, let's say, education received while in the military or on the job. How can we make sure that institutions are giving fair and consistent credit so that students don't have to go in and spend money and time learning something they already know?
Thank you.
Girl?
What's a carrot?
What?
You and I have talked about a carrot to get kids interested and looking forward to college, like you and I did. I mean, we look forward to college, but we had carrots that helped us, you know, attain that. And I just don't see enough carrots for kids to look for incentives. Yes.
Excuse me, carrots. Just a minute. I should have said this before I left, because in order to get home to Grand Junction, I have to leave. So I'm turning it over to the vice chair, and then you can finish your conversation. Yeah. Lieutenant Governor, thank you for coming. We always enjoy having you here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's nice to see you again. Yes, Dr. Flores, those incentives are important. So one of the things, for example, that we are doing this year, did last year for the first time, is Department of Higher Education, working together with the Colorado Department of Labor and Employment, produces a report that says, here's the difference in earnings for people who attend college, to get a certificate, to get an associate degree, or a bachelor's degree. We're releasing a report in just a couple of weeks called Ed Pays, Education Pays. But it's not just saying that college education pays more than not having a college education. It's actually breaking it down by school and by program area. So you can see that a business degree, for example, might pay more than a psychology degree or an engineering degree, more still. But or, frankly, a certificate, a trade certificate in welding or machining may pay more than a bachelor's degree in a liberal arts field. What we want to do is make sure that families and students are more aware of the way in which education will change their lives, not just their incomes. And so we think that's one of the carrots. The other thing is we've invested significantly more. Last year, we increased the amount of need-based financial aid in the state by 40%. That's essentially $40 million to make it more affordable for students to go on to higher education, because we know that cost is one of the things that scares people away. We want them to know that they can afford to go and that there's assistance available for them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Lieutenant Governor? Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. It's nice to see you.
Carry on.
And welcome to the new board members. I know we'll be getting to know each other well, and I just want to reiterate that I'm always happy to come meet with the board, with senior staff, or individual board members if they have questions about higher ed policy or the administration's policy or approach with respect to education issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. I believe Jennifer is next.
Yes.
I don't have a... I was going to accuse you of stealing it.
Yeah,
I'm
sorry. I have it.
I did. I hit it
from both of us?
I have it.
8.02 and then half that.
Oh, wait a minute. I've got a book here. I should be able to figure this out.
This is just a legislative update. That's all. And then it's a board update.
Mr. Commissioner?
Oh, thank you. We're just ready for Jennifer's report. Then any public opportunity, and that's it.
Madam Vice Chair, good afternoon. It's so nice to see you all again. I fear that I'm beginning to sound a bit like a broken record with you all, because I think my report will be a bit similar to what it was last time, which is that, in essence, in terms of the really big substantive core issues that the General Assembly and you all continue to consider, we really have not seen much action at the Capitol since your last meeting in February. It's March, right? So As you know, there were a variety of bills introduced relatively early on in session from both Democrats and Republicans that would make very significant changes to our testing system, to standards, to the accountability system. None of those bills has yet to be considered by a committee. They're all still waiting for their first hearing. Part of why I believe why they are waiting is because there has been a great deal of effort at the Capitol for the last couple of months, and it has certainly intensified in the last week, around coming up with some sort of piece of legislation that I think they've tried to find bipartisan way to create a bill to implement the 1202 recommendations. Again, that has been a very kind of active behind-the-scenes process at the Capitol for the last several weeks. I think that you will see legislation introduced on that topic shortly, today perhaps, tomorrow, early next week. So there has been progress made on that. And again, it's my understanding, and I don't mean to suggest in any way, shape, or form that every member of the legislature has signed off on the bill or that everybody's down with it, but there has been a great deal of work to try to ensure that as introduced, it has bipartisan support. So we will await that eagerly, and we will send it to you the minute it happens. Just quick updates on the bills that you all have taken a position on. So Senate Bill 173 is the data privacy bill. As introduced, the bill applied primarily to vendors, to third-party vendors, and talking about how they needed to protect student data and what they couldn't do. The bill was in committee a couple of, well, may have just been a week ago. It feels like longer at this point in the session, but it was in committee a week ago and underwent a lot of amending, and in fact, so much amending that they just basically crossed out what they started with and created a new bill. They call it a strike below. It now also put some requirements on school districts that didn't exist previously. A lot of why they just decided to start from scratch is they were making so many kind of technical changes to the bill that got introduced that it got really confusing to read. So much of what changed in committee was not substantive, was really just kind of cleanup or technical or trying to fix a little something that didn't get drafted quite right. The exception to that being the inclusion of some specific protections for that, or some specific things that school districts needed to do. Additionally, there was an amendment added that, and I'm just going to pull it up here because I don't want to speak wrongly to it, that essentially requires kind of a public and conspicuous, it uses the word conspicuous, posting up a whole bunch of different information, such as the name, contact information, and location of any data repository where data is kept, the principal purpose or purposes for which covered information is going to be used, a data dictionary, the process by which covered information is collected, the operator's policies and practices regarding storage, retrievability, access controls, retention, and disposal. I'm not going to keep reading to you because I don't think that's helpful. Yes, this does specifically apply to the third parties. I will tell you that I think there's negotiations happening now because there are people who don't like this language and would like to soften it. They feel like it goes too far in terms of the restrictions and requirements it puts on third-party vendors. Obviously, my personal opinion doesn't matter. I don't have a particular position on that. This is something we're going to talk about at the Ledge Contact meeting next week, now that we have a version of the bill that we can kind of go through with all of the changes. So we'll discuss that with the Ledge Contacts, and then if they want to make any recommendations to you all about position or changing position, then we'll go through that process.
Thank you. Would you mind providing a list of the vendors that have been involved in trying to oppose or modify this bill, and particularly whether or not Pearson's one of them?
Madam Vice Chair, Board Member Durham, I would be happy to look that up.
Thank you.
May I add something? Madam Chair? It's not only vendors, but what about nonprofits and such that are, you know, that have been pushing this as well?
Madam Vice Chair, Dr. Flores, anybody who is working on a bill has to tell the Secretary of State that. So we're happy to pull the information for this bill and let you know who has indicated that they're lobbying the bill one way or another with the Secretary of State.
Right. But sometimes they don't. And we know they are. So you probably know.
Madam Vice Chair, Dr. Flores, I mean, I'm happy to, if I see, an, if there's an obvious exclusion from the Secretary of State, I'm happy to, of course, provide you any additional information that I have. I may not know every single person, but I will certainly look at the list, and if I say, oh, wow, I know so-and-so has been involved in it, and they're not listed here, I'm happy to add that information.
Because that was a very large group of people that filled the seat when that report was made public in, at the Capitol.
Okay.
Jane?
Can you refresh my memory? The amendment that was added, and it was called the complication. It's not here.
Conspicuously?
Yeah, what was that? I just blanked out. What was that amendment all about?
Madam Vice Chair, Board Member Goff, I believe the intention of that amendment by the folks who offered it and were successful at adding it to the bill felt that the original bill did not go far enough in terms of protecting student data, and so they wanted to impose some additional requirements on both vendors and school districts about, you know, telling everybody what's being collected and why it's being collected and where it's being posted and where it's being held and all of that. Now, you know, it's always dangerous to speak to intention, right? So that is based on my observation of the hearing. That's what they said.
Yeah. I don't remember exactly what it was. It didn't seem like that. It seemed like there was more of a specific direction that really didn't, at the time, didn't feel like it would impact our discussion too much. It was just, I'm sorry. Anyway, maybe it'll come to me. We might rev it up together. Steve might help me remember. It just seemed like it was more concrete with that, but it would have involved some different kind of approach on the part of the legislature, not so much us.
Madam Vice Chair, Board Member Goff, I mean, I think probably the easiest way for me to make sure I'm answering your question and getting you the information you need, they just have released what they call a pre-amended version of the bill. It's a quite helpful document because it shows all of the changes in one place, and that was what I intended to use as part of our discussion at the legislative contact meeting next week so that we could go through it in more detail.
Could I ask you something? I'm just curious. While these proceedings occur around a bill, is testimony recorded? How do we ultimately get to the place where we can say this was the legislative intent? Is there testimony that's recorded so you can go back and read and sort of tease out what was the intent of the various members?
I think that's
how we talk, isn't it?
You have to recognize her so she can answer.
Excuse me. Go.
They do record the hearings. Okay. And often, I mean, it's not uncommon to go back and say, well, I want to say exactly what that person said.
Okay.
So I think there's a variety of ways that legislative intent can be expressed. Certainly listening to what people say at hearings is one of them.
I just wasn't sure. I knew the federal part. Why are you laughing?
The courts generally try and look at the written word as opposed to trying to call out what might have been in the mind of a particular legislator, because it is a collective act to pass a bill, and so you essentially have 100 intents. So it's difficult to pull that out. And as one who's been deposed several times on my intent, I can tell you if it goes back more than a week, I have no vague idea of what I was doing. So,
or what you said.
Yeah. So it's it really is just the printed word on the page is really the most reliable.
Okay. Thank you. Any more, Jennifer? Oh, gotcha.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. Bad timing. I am happy if you all are tired and would like to be done, and this is enough information for you that will not hurt my feelings. I can tell you about a few more bills that you've taken positions on if you'd like to hear that as well.
Please.
I will continue. So you all have also taken a support position on the bill that would provide grants to BOCES and rural school districts to work together to think about how they can find some efficiencies in their kind of back office functions, right? I think, again, the concept here is that we are in a climate, and we will likely continue to be in a climate of limited resources. Rural school districts in particular have struggled to implement some of the changes in education policy adopted by the legislature and the board. And so this is a way of saying, all right, we're going to incentivize you guys to work together to see if you can find some economies of scale on the things that don't really kind of touch students, so to speak, in terms of the actual in-the-classroom work, but, you know, your payroll and your accounting and that kind of thing. So that bill, you all support it. It came out of the House Education Committee on Monday on a 10-1 vote. Elliot Ass from the department spoke to the bill. Almost always as a department, we very rarely, as you know, we don't take a lot of positions. So not only did he speak to the bill and help explain how it would work, he was able to express your all's support for the legislation.
And that has
well.
A $10 million fiscal note, is that correct?
Madam Vice Chair, at this point, yes, that is correct. And the next stop for that bill is in House Appropriations, and that committee hearing has not been scheduled yet. The final bill that you all have taken a position on is House Bill 1125 by Representatives Lundeen and Senator Hulbert. This is one of those big bills that talks about academic standards and assessments and all of that. Per my comments at the very beginning, that there were all those bills introduced early on. None of them have been heard in committee. This falls into that category. The other final thing I would say is that the budget process is well underway. We had our figure setting for the Department of Education earlier this week. The March revenue forecast will be presented next Wednesday. That's kind of the final decisive piece of information that the Budget Committee needs to finalize all their budget decisions. And at this point, the Senate is scheduled to take up consideration of the long bill the following week. So not next week, but the week after. So that process is moving apace. Madam Vice Chair, the long bill is always carried by the members of the JBC. All six of them have their names listed on it.
And so Wednesday, do you know the time?
Madam Vice Chair, Dr. Flores, I do have a time in my calendar, but let me check because it often changes. So I'd rather just check and I'll send out an email with better information. That is also something that you can listen to online. So would it be helpful if we provided the kind of instructions for how you do that? Is that of interest?
No, I'll read it at night.
Okay.
You what? I'll read it later that night, all synthesized. But are there any of you who want it?
Well, I'd like to. I'd like to attend.
Sure.
I will send out the information.
Yeah.
Great.
Anything else? Any other questions? Jane?
Probably not. I think you answered it with by stating none of those bills we saw have been officially done in yet there. However, I did have a snippet of a hint. I don't know where I'd had it. That 1123, which was Senator Representative Tate, Senator Tate,
Representative.
Sorry, was pulled with no clear answer where it went. Is that true? I just heard it briefly and I thought maybe they have it confused with another number, such as 1125, but then I went and checked with on 1125 and that was still good in place going no new status. But the other one, do you know, Jennifer? Do you know anything about 1123 being?
Madam Vice Chair, Board Member Goff.
Do you know?
It was scheduled for a hearing, and then they decided not to hear the bill that day. My guess is that's what you're referring to.
Just change the date.
That's correct. And at the moment, it is not scheduled for a hearing date. So that's. But I can understand why someone would ask that question, right? Because it was on the calendar, and then suddenly it wasn't. And it's just because they changed the date. That's all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So the next item on the agenda is public comment. If you have signed up for public comment, I'll call your name, ask you to come to the podium to address the board. Each person will have 3 minutes to address the board. Mrs. Markle will be timing your comments, and we ask that you stay with that limitation.
Madam Chair.
I'll do my best to watch, but you please help me, because I'm paying attention to that individual, and then it doesn't get the...
Madam Chair, we stated that public comment was going to be at 4 o'clock. It's 20 till. If we could maybe have a few minutes to go to the bathroom.
Or how about before that? Or do that and then come back and let's do the... Do we not have...
Did we actually announce it to be at 4?
Did we have board
Maybe we can board have members?
No, we haven't done board reports.
We haven't done board reports, and I don't know where it is in here. I think it's kind of missing. Why don't we do board reports?
Okay.
Did we do it?
Anyone have anything to report? Thank you, Pam.
Like most of my report is that I did go see a Hope Online Learning Center, and I was quite impressed with it. The other thing I want to add is, I said this last month, I think, I'd like to try again. I want to get on the agenda to discuss whatever changes, if any, we need to make to board policy about election of a vice chair in the event the chair has to step down. So can we get that on the agenda for next month? Do we have time for that?
This I don't know is yet. Where we I don't know. The reason it wasn't on the agenda, I think you saw the agenda, and if I heard correctly last month, we have not forgotten at all. But you did not respond favorably when I suggested we were going to have to go into 3 days.
No, I did not.
So I'm going to ask your patience on that. We know that that's what you'd like on the agenda. This agenda had 5-minute items on it. Luckily, 2 items were removed right before the board meeting. Otherwise, we would be still way behind at this point. So we just had an awful lot. I think the fact that we've been having charter appeals and presentations by the school districts and a couple of hearings with testimony has... I mean, maybe the agenda was short for you, but the agenda was kind of tight.
I do think it's an important issue
to visit,
though.
I agree. It is not off of our radar. It's definitely on our list. Deb?
Is that okay, Pam? Does he have other things to say?
You know, in the next 2 weeks, I'd like to see where we are on getting it on the agenda.
As soon as the agenda comes out, you'll see.
I was thinking maybe it's in the sense that maybe it's a legal issue, too. I mean, we have to look at the motion, what's in our rules, what's in our policies and procedures. So maybe, you know, we can get some research on it. It can be a fairly quick item.
Yeah, maybe that would help.
That's why I was looking at you, Tony.
Yes. So I had another comment.
Sure.
It's about the READ Act. I'm concerned that when is it? We opened rule making last time. We didn't address it this time. We had a very full agenda. I just want to make sure when it gets on the agenda again, we have enough time to think about the issues and we're not rushing to quickly pass it.
So if I'm not mistaken, that's on our agenda next time, Mr.
To pass it or to look at it again and to really go deep on the rules.
We noticed it, or did we?
We noticed it last month.
Don't we have the hearing now coming up?
It would be May.
When do we have to vote on it, May?
I thought it was April.
I thought it was April.
2:00, April 8th.
Okay, it's April.
Yeah. Is that when we have to vote on it or talk about it again?
Well, if it's unanimous, we can vote on it. Oh, sorry.
Ms. Markle. Are we going to be pressured to vote on it in April?
No.
No, you're not pressured to vote.
Good. Yes. And then we still have another month.
Yes.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to do.
Or you can pass it in December.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure we wouldn't, you know, be rushed. There's a lot of issues. Okay. Thank you. That's all.
Any other board reports?
Madam Chair, I would like to bring up the issue of concerning a meeting that where we can openly discuss the park testing. I had asked for this.
Right.
And
can you narrow that down? We've been discussing park for about 4 years, and so it would be helpful to have a...
I think clarity
as to what the topic of the discussion is.
I think in April we will probably get the results. The board will get the results of PARC.
No.
No, we won't. No, they won't even be done.
They won't even be done testing until
May. Oh, I thought
May.
The teachers were going to have a summary kind of report in May.
Well, not to my knowledge.
We were going to provide a report once we got some results. Some information for you. We talked about in June.
We'll talk about
this at June.
Okay. I thought that we were going to be getting some kind of results in April, and then after that, in May, I have that written somewhere, that then the teachers were going to discuss it sometime in May.
I think the board needs to really have a discussion.
I hear what you say, but your information is not correct, and so I need some real clarity about what you want to talk about, what information needs to be available. If you're waiting to get the feedback from the park exam.
The park people were here today. I couldn't ask many questions, if you recall. I asked questions, and I was told that this was not the time to ask questions.
Okay, so let's work on clarifying what your concerns are, because you've now said several different things. One of them related to the results, and then having a conversation.
Yes, results.
Okay, the results will not be back for quite a while. So do you want to wait until then, or is there another topic that you would like to discuss before we have any kind of results from park?
We haven't had really a discussion about park at all. We have not. We have had bits and pieces of park, and we have not joined.
Let's work on this.
In a discussion.
There's been no. I don't understand.
No, you do understand, because I wrote a lengthy letter to everybody on this board about that meeting on park, and so I think you know very well. Everybody got it, I know. And so I would like to put it somewhere in April, hopefully, where we have a special session where we discuss park.
Thank you.
We don't normally do agenda setting here at the table. The agenda setting is done through the chair and the vice chair, and then you find out about it.
Okay.
This board report time is really time for us to talk about where we may have been, how we've interacted with our constituents.
Okay.
Some things that have come up.
Well, we got on this topic, and so I can report on what I've
done. You have something to report?
Yes, I do. Thank you. I did visit a Denver public school. I have been, in fact, I visited with the House District meeting where Common Core was being discussed, and one of the people in the department, unbeknownst to me, was there and was discussing this. I also went to CASE and CASB, and I found those to be very helpful, especially with a report that Elliot Asp gave. I found that very helpful, and I found another report at CASB that was presented by professor at the
Lori Shepherd
at the University of Colorado at Boulder. I found that very helpful as well.
Thank you.
Sir. And that's what led me to believe. I think that there's a lot of issues concerning park that we need to discuss.
Steve.
Thank you. I just would observe that the rules of the board allow three members to call a special meeting anytime they want to. So if we think that it's time to discuss something, I think we can probably work together on that to get that done. I think we're overdue for sort of an in-depth education discussion. We've been killing a lot of flies and putting out a lot of fires. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it lends itself particularly to a good policy, but it would be nice if we had some of those other opportunities. I think in terms of report, the only thing I have to report is what I read in the paper this morning. I always, in our local paper, they have some article from 50 years ago today. And so 50 years ago today, which would have been March of 1965, it says 14 juniors at Bennett Hill Academy will take the 1965 National Merit Scholar Qualifying Test Saturday. The test is a three-hour examination of educational development and is the first step in the 11th annual competition for the four-year merit scholarship. I'm finding it hard to believe things have improved since 1965.
Still doing it.
Except we graduated from high school.
That was a good year.
Jane?
Speaking of high school, I spent a great afternoon with probably 10 or 12 high school students throughout CD7. So these were kids who are either in their junior or senior year in Adams County, an Adams County district, or in Jefferson County. It's the first time that I've had lately to have just purely the student interaction in a, you know, be above and a little bit different than what we have seen our high school students doing publicly and newsworthy making events. But they were talking a lot about school and about future in the sense of, I will tell you the word, the A word assessment or the T word test did not come up at all in the conversation. And it was all about just thinking ahead. And they really were interested in professional things in the sense of what is, the profession of an educator. In general, it wasn't anything particular. It was very interesting, and they were—they're concerned about school finance. So we have, whether you call it or not, we've—I guess—we've done a good job of raising the awareness and having the young people's ears perking up about how this works, what it takes to run schools, fund them. But they were—they've been paying attention to school finance conversations. So we can look forward to that. That was great. Other than that, nothing of really great note out of the ordinary, but I do have the intention and gratefully some opportunities to meet with high school students and in some regards the middle school age, but right now my focus as far as student talking is early post-secondary or the last couple of years of high school. So it's been really fulfilling and rewarding and pretty darn educational on my part to hear some things. So that's what I've been doing other than this agenda that we've all been working for the past couple of months. So.
Thanks,
I haven't gone
everybody.
Anywhere lately.
Thank you. All right. Are we ready to have members of the public please come speak for 3 minutes? I'd like to call Oscar Zavala, please.
Buenas tardes. Mi nombre es Oscar Zavala. Soy un padre orgulloso de un niño que está asistiendo a la escuela de Stripe Lake, aquí en Denver. Gracias por la oportunidad de hablar hoy. Los estándares académicos esenciales en Colorado, nuestros nuevos exámenes quieren medir cómo los estudiantes alcanzan esa expectativa. Mi hijo Wilber quiere ser un médico. Yo sé que para alcanzar ese sueño tiene que tener éxito en la universidad para ser aceptado en una buena escuela de medicina. Los viejos estándares de Colorado estaban atrasados, no estaban preparando a muchos estudiantes para las clases de universidad o para la fuerza laboral de hoy. Los nuevos estándares de Colorado fueron implementados por profesores en el 2013 y están enfocados en preparar a todos los estudiantes para la universidad y sus carreras. Yo apoyo esos estándares. Ayudan a nuestros niños a obtener pensamiento crítico. Además, me gusta que haya claridad sobre lo que se espera de mi hijo cada año. Hablar con sus profesores sobre cómo poder ayudar en casa. Es importante a un buen examen que pueda mostrar dónde los estudiantes están rindiendo y en qué área necesitan más asistencia. Los resultados de esos exámenes prueben información sobre cómo desempeñan las escuelas y los distritos a lo largo del estado. Esta información es valiosa para los padres que puedan elegir a qué escuela quieren que sus hijos asistan. Sé que muchos de ustedes son padres. Para mí, proteger a mi hijo significa prepararlo para el éxito en el mundo real y proveerle de todo lo que necesita para alcanzar sus sueños, aunque sé que nuestro sistema educativo no es perfecto y hay posibilidad de reflexionar y de mejoramiento. Me siento más confiado que nunca de que la educación que Wilber está recibiendo lo preparará para conseguir sus sueños por favor no acabar con esto. Gracias por su tiempo.
Gracias, señor Zavala. It's wonderful support for your son. Thank you. Princess Mack.
Good afternoon, Madam Vice Chair and members of the board. Excuse me. My name is Princess Mack, and I am here as a parent of two generations of children that are 26 and 27 and 7 and 6. I also am a representative of Together Colorado and Climb Higher. The reason I am before you today is that I would encourage that you embrace the Colorado Academic Standards and Flexible Assessments. The reason for that is because having raised two academically successful adults and now having two little kiddos in the system, it is imperative to me, especially by them being high-need scholars, that the assessments are not only tailored to the success of our students, but that we as parents and staff members know the growth of our students. The reason that this is also important to me is because as I looked around the room today, what I noticed is that everyone has a decorum or expectation of decorum in this room. I believe that that comes through many flexible assessments or testing, so you know what your level of expectation is and where your areas of growth need to be. I don't think that's any different from our scholars. Our scholars and our families need to know where our students are at academically. It ties intricately into the student growth. It is not fair for you or for me or for anyone that is intertwined in our children's education to not have an idea of where our students are succeeding. It is not fair for our students to graduate and not be able to compete in the market of career. It is not fair for them to have to stay in a certain geographical area, because if they move out of the geographical area, they will not be as successful as their counterparts who have been able to have the testing that reflects what their growth is and where their opportunities of excelling could be, or their opportunities to address the challenges. I came here to read off of a paper, but I just want to really say there is an African saying that is Sawabona, which means I see you. And I am not here to be combative with teachers or with the school board. I want us to work in collaboration. But moreover, I want us to see our children. And I want our children to see themselves and where they can achieve and not flounder through our academic system. It is not fair for our children to graduate and read on a third grade level. If they want to work at Walmart or Subway, that is wonderful. But I want that to be an option, not a necessity. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Brent Owen.
Good afternoon, State Board members, Commissioner Hammond. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak today about the use of assessments and standardized testing in Colorado. My name is Brent Owen, and I'm an associate at Lewis Roker Rothgerber. It's a law firm here in town. I'm a member of Colorado Succeeds, but I'm here today as a new parent. I have a son who's a month and a half years old named Henry, and I'm here to speak to you from my perspective as a new father about why high standards and quality statewide tests are important. The updated Colorado academic standards are preparing students with the critical thinking skills and the knowledge they need to succeed in career and life. These are exactly the kind of standards that I want my son to learn. As a parent, I also want the peace of mind that comes with the statewide assessment. The PARC tests help schools understand whether students are meeting the benchmarks from one grade so they can move on to the next. This is important information that, as a parent, I can use to find the very best school for my son. Comparing schools and finding the right fit would be impossible without every Colorado school administering the same high-quality test. All that being said, I think the concern about over-testing children is legitimate. As the Standards and Assessments Task Force recently reported, it is true that testing efficiency can be improved. Duplicative testing should be eliminated. If the same skill is being measured by multiple tests, the assessment that most accurately compares to Colorado academic standards should be used, and the other tests should be eliminated. Another important finding by the task force is that local assessments, not state tests, account for the majority of time spent testing in all grade levels across Colorado. Hearing this as a parent, I personally want to know exactly how much time will be spent locally in my son's classroom on testing. That is a better use of resources than focusing on the less than 2% of time he'll be spending on the important statewide tests. Like any other change worth making, implementation for practical use of these new assessments will take time, patience, and flexibility. Concerns such as testing burden and access should not be a hindrance to the great progress we've made in Colorado's education system. To put on my business hat for a moment, companies are relying on our schools to produce students who are ready for college and career, and these tests, as well as the Colorado academic standards at their very core, are the key to ensure that Colorado's kids will be ready for Colorado's jobs. I'm eager to see sensible change happen without abandoning our strong standards, developed in Colorado by Coloradans, and those aligned annual statewide tests. Without them, I worry that the school system just won't be a good place for my son. The bottom line is that tests, in various forms, are a reality of life. The Colorado academic standards are the best option to test our kids. I worry that a myopic focus on eliminating tests will undermine Colorado's education system. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Duncan Potter, and I'm not sure that I read that properly. Lynn Roberts.
How would you read that? I want to thank you for all the time and work that you share with the children in this state of Colorado, and I thank you for your recent decisions to protect the right of test refusal. I'm here as a parent of two children who are served by a Montessori school in Denver Public Schools, a Title I school. I'm indebted to some extraordinary individuals who've taught them things that I couldn't have, and to Maria Montessori for her groundbreaking work in developmental education for children. I'm thankful for the opportunity for my children to go there. Parents in Denver Public Schools, like thousands and thousands of others in the state, have critically examined the tests and the culture surrounding it. Like them, we have initiated exchanges with our local administration and our board, and we have been open about our informed concerns. Like parents in every other district in this state, we want a public education that serves all children, that promotes equity, and that builds our communities. We watch thousands upon thousands of other people's children be excused without consequence from tests that have been proven neither reliable nor valid, that violate our children's right to data privacy, and that occupy untold hours, more than 2% of instructional time, with testing, test prep, and infrastructure drills, which you have read about in lots of stories. This is a system that serves only to further polarize the diverse children and families who need each other in a testing environment in which results correlate most with zip code and family income. We met with our district leaders in January, and we were told that despite Senate Bill 163, which directs that test refusals not be counted as zeros, when Denver Public School parents opt their children out, their children's scores are counted as zeros in accountability frameworks. We were clearly told that our teachers' bonuses, $7,000 of pre-Christmas bonus, would be at risk, that our school may lose funding, that our children won't be able to participate in field trips or continuation ceremonies, and that we may even compromise their college admissions. We are further told that we are doing our children and their peers a disservice, those learning English, those with special needs, those who need more instructional time and are losing more to this testing culture. The parents whose children's strengths these tests don't capture are told that their professionally prepared teachers might not know what to teach them, to help them be ready for post-secondary life. And the families whose children are likely to score proficient get subtle and not so subtle messages that this is what they owe their school and their teachers. Since your action last month, we've approached our district. We've asked them whether your motions would make a difference for our teachers' livelihood. We have not received an answer to repeated questions about that. One of my friends said it so clearly when we met with our district leaders. Our teachers are being used as human shields. I care deeply about the freedom that my school and my professional educators have to implement what they know, to serve learners who are diverse in ways that we value but can't quantify, to deliver a developmentally appropriate education.
Can you sum up your presentation, please?
Yes,
I'm sorry.
I can. Let me skip ahead
to
my asks. But I'm concerned these tests turn public money into private profit, and I think you've read a lot about that too. Today, I ask you to give the broadest protection possible to parents who make choices about testing and data collection on behalf of their children.
Thank you,
certainly
Ms. Roberts.
A holiday from accountability measures seems like a way to ensure free dialogue. Thank you very much for your time.
Deborah Cole.
Madam Vice Chair and members of the board. The following was written by Dr. Joseph Bean, a longtime Glendale, California school board member, who was describing the new paradigm for public education that had just been instituted in the state of California. The description, written in 1970, is chillingly predictive of the regimen that is unfolding here now. Quote, "When the teacher has completed an instructional unit and has tested the students, the test results are assigned symbols and computerized. The information flows to a regional data collection and processing center, one of several in each state. There, a student profile is built for each student in the region. In this master bank, an enormous amount of information is permanently stored on each student. After three or four testings or evaluations, the programmer will no doubt have standardized the objectives for every classroom, and the usual decision makers will be locked out of the process. The power of the programmer bypasses the Board of Education, the superintendent, and the parents. Even the teacher loses out. The teacher will be truly a facilitator and a manager of the classroom, but not a teacher at all. After each child is programmed with the predetermined knowledge, values, and potential skills, he will be standardized and averaged out, leveled off at a baseline of mediocrity. Subject matter as we know it will no longer exist, and very few other aspects of education will remain. The more than 40 million children in our nation's schools will be insensitive and unnatural and will be capable of only highly directed behavior and holding identical points of view. Under the new management, the information input to the student will be limited. Random encounter in the learning process will be eliminated. Instruction will be highly prescribed and programming toward a particular ideological, philosophical, political, and social point of view will be the chief characteristic of the system." Close quote. Dr. Bean resigned from the board when it became clear he could do nothing to stop the process just described. His resignation statement included this sobering comment on the disconnect between student families and every level of school administration. He said, quote, "With their districts 90% controlled by the federal and state governments, parents live under complete tyranny when their own local boards identify with the administrative staff instead of the people whom they were elected to represent." Close quote. Dr. Bean could have been describing the feelings of Colorado parents and, yes, teachers and school leaders in their encounters with the education bureaucracy regarding their concerns over data collection, Common Core, and the aligned testing regimen. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Carol Baum. Anita Stapleton. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't.
Away there. Good afternoon, Madam Vice Chair and members of the board. I am concerned as a grandparent on all the testing on Common Core in our schools today.
The tests are linked with controversy as students give accounts of what they experience as they take these tests. Such things as anxiety, fear, dizziness, headaches, stomach aches, crying, couldn't concentrate because of noise in the background on the tests that were taken. Some felt like they were being brainwashed and feeling weird after taking these tests. Teachers are frustrated because the time in the classroom is shortened because of the amount of time to prepare for these tests. Their hands are tied in many cases so that they can't teach the way that is best for our children. Common Core is a one-size-fits-all approach to education. The cost of all of this is tremendous, and more money spent does not mean better outcomes. Bill Gates, who is one of those that is funding the Common Core, said in an interview in September of 2013, "It would be great if education stuff worked, but we won't know for probably 10 years on the outcome." This is an experiment on our children, and I feel that we need to get out of PARC and Common Core for these reasons. It is invasive. It indoctrinates our children. It is expensive, and it is taking control away from parents, schools, our state, because of individuals who are unelected, and also the federal government has become involved in this process. It also is taking away transparency when the tests are so secretive that parents and teachers aren't allowed to see what is on them. To help educate you on this important issue, I would invite you to watch Anita Hoge, H-O-G-E. She gives a great presentation that's called The End Game of Assessments, and she is a parent of a child in Pennsylvania, and she did a lot of research on this because she was concerned with her child came home and told her some things that were on the test. So she wanted to delve into it more. And it tells she tells why all the data is being collected on our children today. And I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I'm Carol Morenz. I have been here different times this year, and I am an educator at heart. I'm an educator by trade. I'm a mom. I'm not a grandmother, but I have a heart for the students in this state, and that's why I'm here. I have no dog in the fight. But since I've been here, I am very alarmed, mystified, shocked, maybe naive, to see the number of people that sit at this table and they're in this room whose livelihood depends on the children in our schools. And I don't like it. I think it needs to be addressed. And you are the people here that can do it. I appreciate every one of you up here because you are giving us your time. Believe me, I did not know how much time it took. You are giving us your energy, and I didn't know how much time that took, and your intellect. And I rest assured that you're going to make the right decisions for the children and not for the people whose lives have been invested into our children for their own livelihood. On another issue, I want to speak about the assessments. When I was in education, which I still am, but when I was paid for it, in the spring of the year, we would give the students a test. This test was 2, maybe 3 hours in the morning. By the end of the year, the students had their test results. Not only did they have their results, the parents had the results, and we knew from looking at that test where that child stood on a percentile for Colorado and for our country. I could look at that test and know if that child knew his nouns, pronouns, a complete sentence, a topic sentence, an adjective, an adverb, could write a paragraph. I could see what they knew in math. This test is still around. At that time, it was called the Iowa Basic Skills, and it cost 75 cents. It's still here. It's a little more expensive, but is not as expensive as what we are putting our taxpayers through and our children. I have something that was given to me to read by a teacher who wishes to remain anonymous.
I'm terribly sorry.
Can this be her time now? It will take me probably 30 seconds to read it.
Please do.
Thank you. The teachers do not want to be known. They don't want anybody to know what they're saying, which is frightening to me. They don't want anyone to know how they feel about what's going on in the schools. Students are testing for over 20 hours in the spring, which takes a lot of time out of the classroom, working on content that we could go more in-depth with. The testing completely closes the lab to other grade levels for the rest of the year, so they cannot get typical support with Waterford that they usually can. The tests are written so wordy with odd formatting and above grade level that they are truly not assessing the students' knowledge. They're assessing the students' computer skills. PARC will be administered on computer rather than paper, which places pressure on our younger students to learn keyboarding. Tight school budgets are spending more on hardware just to accommodate computerized PARC. It would make much more sense to give one test on paper. Activities in the classroom should not be centered on what is on the PARC test. This robs the classrooms of teaching moments. Massive amounts of instructional time is lost. The test will be used to evaluate teacher performance. This is flawed logic. There are way too many variables in the lives of students that can have negative effects on how they do in school. Over-evaluate a staff, and you will have no time to inspire, no energy to motivate. Thank you so much for this time.
Thank you, Ms. Moran. Ms. Stapleton.
Things up. Sorry, it's been a long 2 days. I feel your pain. Thank you, State Board of Education, for this time. I'm Anita Stapleton from Pueblo, Colorado. I'm here today turning in 114 letters of opposition to the Common Core and the PARC testing. This brings our total close to 3,800. Today I've heard a lot of discussion about PARC and about Common Core, at least trying to. A real conversation must be done. I agree with Dr. Flores. This should have happened prior to us joining the consortium. I'm not going to argue who got us in there. I just know how we can get out. So now that our obligation has been fulfilled and this state board has agreed to pull out as of April last year, our voices need to be heard. Our voices, your employers, demand that we not be silenced or ignored any longer. Colorado public education will not come out the winner. As long as PARC and Colorado stays in partnership with one another, we will continue to wage a campaign to refuse to test. As long as our students are being sacrificed as the tool to make our teachers conform, not teach, conform to mandates, to be labeled losing their effectiveness status. They will become facilitators. They're already being called facilitators. We will refuse to test as long as this continues. Here's what needs to happen. First, you all need to educate yourselves regarding the truth around PARC and Pearson and the purpose of the test. It is about big data to drive the curriculum. Please read the report that I am providing for you. It is by the Department of Education. I have ear-tagged pages. I have spoke about these reports numerous times, not only to you, but yes, across the street to our legislators. Our bills have been put on hold. Why? To silence our voice. I don't make this stuff up. I was accused of that yesterday by some people in the audience that we had a conversation with. I don't bring anything to you that is not fact-based. Pearson sat here today along with the CDE and claimed that they don't collect psychosocial data, values, attitudes, behavioral responses, etc. However, this report clearly states in black and white that it does. It talks about the embedded assessments in Newton's playground. It goes on and on and on, and I heard some of that language today. Furthermore,
It's amazing. Denver Public Schools is all over this book. A lot of our Colorado schools are. Why? Because we're heavily embedded with the U.S. Department of Education, Arne Duncan, Bill Gates, and the likes. They have an agenda, and now Colorado's been elevated as the golden child state. And I am not going to stop until it's done. I'm getting tired, I'm getting cranky, but my kids mean more than anything to me, and so do my teachers. Pearson and the CDE also claim that Colorado does not share this data with the federal government. You have documents, which I've shared with this board many times before, and I'm almost done, the co-op agreement between the U.S. Department of Education and PARC. I have one question. I asked this question today, and our chair did not read the card properly. PARC contracts with Pearson. PARC contracts with the U.S. Department of Education. I've highlighted this for you. Whose contract trumps whose? It is clearly stated, your pages are marked, so easy reading for you. If PARC is mandated to share this information
with
the U.S. Department of Education, then how can we sit here and spend hours on hours listening to lies?
Ms. Stapleton, we'll make sure that the question you just articulated will be part of the FAQs.
Well, I hope so, because it was in clear language, and I was mocked, actually, for that. You also have, and I'm done, truly,
thank you.
But you have a big packet of all the grievances that are happening, all the inconsistencies in districts. I asked last May in Grand Junction for this board to please go to the districts and ask them to make their policies regarding refusal to test, because this was going to be a big campaign. It fell on deaf ears.
Ms.
And now we have many grievances, and the districts are opening themselves up for lawsuits.
Thank you. So we began public comment before 4:00. And I'm concerned that there may have been someone who's come who wanted to speak, but the sign-up sheet was with me instead of out in the hall. Please come forward if you would like to speak. Oh, one at a time, however, if that's okay. And introduce yourself, please.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Laura Chester, and I am an 8th grade math teacher here in Colorado. I believe it is critically important for educators to have an opportunity to share their perspective during policy discussions that will impact their classroom. So I also work to organize other teachers to help elevate their voices in these types of discussions. Today I am here to offer my perspective about the new Colorado state tests that we have been administering over the last few weeks. As a teacher, my goal is to help students think deeply, reason critically, and defend arguments. If they remember the math, that's a bonus. As adults, I hope my students will take their current experiences and apply them as good citizens of society who seek knowledge and think before they speak. These are the exact skills that the PARC exam is targeting with the construction of its questions. These questions require students to compare strategies and explain possible approaches instead of simply choosing A, B, C, or D. When I gave my students the practice problems to the PARC exam, they struggled, but in such an amazing way. They were challenged to make connections between current and past learning and to use a variety of tools within a single problem. When they ultimately finished a problem, their big grins clearly conveyed their sense of triumph. I admit that there are things about PARC that could be improved, but it is also critical that we recognize the structures of the assessment that are good and should continue to be tweaked and developed over time. There are always ways to improve upon things, but throwing something out every time we think there is a flaw would create a world in which nothing ever gets accomplished. So in closing, while there are things that we still need to work on to improve our state tests, I believe that these new tests are a vast improvement over what we have been using in the past. They are one piece of a puzzle that, when put together, helps prepare our students for whatever is next for them in life. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Could I take chair's privilege and ask you one question, Ms. Chester, which is, we learned today that there are some questions that will be asked of the students, I think, in the next iteration, in the May iteration, about the test and how it was, how hard it was, etc. Mm-hmm. Are teachers being asked any questions? Are you seeing the assessment?
No, I have never heard that, actually.
So you don't see the assessment in order to get any to provide any kind of feedback?
We will get feedback from the results once they're established, which going forward is intended to be rather immediate, but in the first couple of years, we'll take extra time.
Okay. Well, let us know if at least at that point you're not asked for input, because I think that's also an important piece of all this. And thank you very much for coming and for answering my question.
Sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next person.
Good afternoon. My name is Angela Cobian, Angela Cobian. I'm from Denver, Colorado. I'm a former elementary school teacher with Denver Public Schools, turned education organizer at Together Colorado. I come representing a cohort of women, one of who you spoke to earlier. Her name is Princess. And I come here just to echo her talking points and reaffirm the fact that if we've taken one giant step forward, it makes absolute no sense to take one giant step back. What am I talking about? Well, I'll elaborate. I'm not only an elementary school teacher, former, but I was also a first-generation college student and a woman of color. So when I came back to my community here in Denver to see the state of public education, I was so shocked to continue to see that children of color were being left behind, and children across the state of Colorado included are being left behind because the standards that were in place initially were so low and were not preparing kids to be fully successful in college. I experienced that myself as a freshman at the Colorado College in Colorado Springs when I first got there in 2007. I had to work twice as hard as all of my peers to be able to be a successful college political scientist, and fortunately I was able to do that with all of the support that I received at that institution, but a student shouldn't have to work twice as hard, especially when the institution is already set up to disenfranchise them in the first place. So, in closing, the reason why I'm here is to support the high-quality Colorado academic standards and the tests that are aligned to put them in place, and to ask you to please think twice before limiting them or taking a step backward, as I mentioned in the beginning. And I yield my time to the floor.
Thank you, Ms. Cobian.
Good afternoon, Vice Chair Schroeder and members of the State Board. My name is Duncan Dotterer. I'm here representing myself as a fourth grade educator. I'm pleased to be afforded this opportunity to speak before the board today. I'm a Colorado native and have taught in Denver Public Schools for the past 6 years. I thought the board would benefit from hearing someone who teaches the students affected by PARC and the Common Core State Standards. As you know, students across the district are currently taking the PARC tests. Yesterday in my fourth grade classroom, we finished the literacy portion of the PARC test, and after the testing session has ended, several students expressed interest in reflecting on the testing experience. Many students felt that they had accomplished an important feat. All year we had been preparing for the assessments using the Common Core State Standards as a framework to guide learning. There was an overall sentiment of elation among my students. It felt as if they had been challenged, they enjoyed the challenge, and as a result they were triumphant. Throughout my lessons during the school year, I have been discussing the differences between the PARC test and its predecessors, the TCAP and the CSAP, with my students. I have repeatedly referred to the level of critical thinking and in-depth analysis required to succeed on the PARC test, and I have argued that such skills are of great benefit to them. For example, rather than writing an essay from their own perspective, students are asked to read a narrative and write from the point of view of one of the characters in the story. Although there has been much opposition among educators, parents, and policymakers to the Common Core State Standards and PARC tests, compelling students to step out of their own subjective experiences and think about the world through the lens of a fictional character promotes creativity and builds cognitive flexibility. As a passionate and devoted educator, I hold my students to a high standard of achievement in all content areas. I know that all of my students are capable of greatness in my classroom and in their lives. My greatest concern is that after students leave my classroom and before they enter my classroom, they may not receive the consistency that is so vital to their educational success. It is my understanding that the Common Core State Standards have been developed using rigorous, internationally comparative measures. This is evidenced in a document prepared by David T. Conley, the Common Core State Standards Validation Committee co-chair and professor of educational policy and leadership, and founder and director of the Center for Educational Policy Research at the University of Oregon. I urge you, the State Board of Education, to embrace rather than reject the Common Core State Standards in order to secure college and career readiness for all of Colorado students. I thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much. Yes, please.
Board, thank you so much for your time. I know I've been with you today. It's been a long day, but your efforts are amazing to hear everybody out. I was not going to speak today. I've been before the board a few times before, and I feel like I've said everything I need to say, but I just couldn't sit any longer without saying some things that are coming to my mind and heart based on
Could you give me your name first, please?
Based on the conversation. My name is Cindy Will. I'm a school leader. I'm a principal of a charter school in Colorado Springs. We love accountability, but to be accountability, it's got to be the right test. I'm a school leader of this is in its second year, and I say this with great humility, but pride for on behalf of our staff and our students. Our first year we were open last year, we had the highest scores in the region for fourth grade, 100% proficient advance for fourth grade math, 95% proficient advance for reading and for writing. As a brand new school, kids coming from all over, it was remarkable. Third grade the same, we had great results. Fifth grade, I can't report out, our number was too low. We love accountability. Has to be the right kind of accountability. I'd like to just say that a previous speaker said that there's only 2% of time consumed by state tests. Not in the world that I'm living in. We are wiping out a quarter of our instructional sequences on content to make room for all the different tests under one roof. One quarter. We used to be a four-quarter instructional model. We now have to be a three-quarter instructional model. I was at a conference last week. PARC results, I was told, what can be expected in February. Not April. February. Next February. PARC results. Hard to make data-driven decisions by that time. One of my chief concerns, and it's now coming out, the CEO of PARC said in a recent article, my chief concern about national assessments is not just the federal state component, but these tests are different. They drive curriculum. To do well in these tests, you've got to have a curriculum that's aligned with it. So now we've got a national curriculum that's going to have to conform with a national test that conforms with Common Core. We just wiped out a lot of different school models, including the Montessori that I heard represented here today. Why are the tests created in secrecy? I keep hearing these numbers, as we did today, about how many educators in Colorado were involved. I've never met one. I've been in education for decades. I've never heard one educator that was involved in these. They're in secrecy. In the years past, our schools have a tradition of 100% participation. Last year, with those results that our staff and students did, 100% participation. This year, we're in our second week of testing. Every day, more parents are opting out. Those are going to be zeros. We're down to 45% refusal rate, and we've always had 100%. There's something very different what's going on. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wanted to speak, please? Thank you very much for coming, ladies and gentlemen. And our board meeting is recessed until April. Thank you.